Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
Joe Biden is paying off more student loan debt. And paying off student loan debt is a terrible idea, and I state clearly this is the buying of votes. Tony Katz today. 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. That is the number. It doesn't matter that the Supreme Court has said you can't do this. He looks for ways. He searches for ways. Another $7.4 billion in student debt being paid off, being canceled. These are people who took loans. And these loans need to get paid back. If the loans are not paid back, this has now become a spending program. The loan isn't paid back. The money got paid by someone, meaning the government. The government is us, so we paid for other people to get a college degree. I believe this is a despicable act by Joe Biden. Not one of decency, not one of goodness. It's despicable. And yes, I make it akin to, if not just flat out, buying votes. White House now says it has forgiven approximately $153 billion in debt for 4.3 million student borrowers. Now, there are sometimes plans that if you were to work in certain areas as an educator in the medical profession, well, then, you know, you could have, after a certain number of years, you could have your loan paid off. I think that there's a fair amount of us who would say we're absolutely okay with that. For example, let's talk about nurses. We need nurses badly. If you told me we were paying off debt for nurses now and X number of years into the future, I might see my way clear to some of that. Although I'm not a big fan of government spending programs. But paying off the debt of somebody who took gender studies? I have no interest whatsoever in paying off the debt for somebody who took gender studies. I'm not interested in paying for the person who got the degree in puppetry. None of these things, thank you. Absolutely none of these things am I interested in. But an odd conversation has come up, and it started with the White House. And it took these Republicans, who all took PPP money, and said, hey, is this you? You got a problem with paying off student loan debt, but you're okay with taking this money? This is a nonsensical argument, in my view. And I got presented with a tweet, as one often can get presented with a tweet. And the question that was asked of me was, why are you okay with one and not the other? The question read, student loan forgiveness. Biden has forgiven $62.8 billion in loans for 876,000 borrowers. This is what Ryan wrote me. PPP, Paycheck Protection Program. Those loans, through the $2.2 trillion CARES Act, in the amount of $800 billion were forgiven. Less than a quarter of the Paycheck Protection Plan money spent went to paychecks, while the remainder went to business owners and shareholders and creditors like banks. The same banks that forgave paycheck protection loans without any proof of a hardship or loss of income from the COVID flu. That's how he writes it. How can you be against one but yet silent on the other when the other was about 10 times more costly to taxpayers and a primary reason why the national debt ballooned? I didn't favor the CARES Act. I was on this show. I didn't favor the CARES Act. I didn't favor any of this spending. ever. So the idea that I have been silent is not so much me, but maybe you have not tuned in as much as you should, and shame on you. But let us discuss a true difference between the student loan debt payments payoff and the Paycheck Protection Program, which Ryan brings up, and I appreciate the clarity. The CARES Act. The CARES Act, which passed the Senate 96 to nothing. I'm looking at the data right here at congress.gov. It passed the House, what was it, 419 to 6? 419 for, 6 against. The CARES Act included this Paycheck Protection Program, implemented by the Small Business Administration, with support from the Department of Treasury. This from the Department of Treasury website. This program provides small businesses with funds to pay up to 8 weeks of payroll costs, including benefits. Funds can also be used to pay interest on mortgages, rent, and utilities. This program was voted on by Congress and signed into law by the President of the United States. Student loan forgiveness, and we should be clear, Ryan, you gave me the number of $62.8 billion in loans for 876,000 borrowers. I have got right here that the White House has forgiven about $153 billion in debt for 4.3 million borrowers. So we have got a difference, at least in the amount of money, because it doesn't matter the number of borrowers, maybe, by I think you've got it wrong by half. It's double. That was done unilaterally, with no input from Congress. As a matter of fact, in if you will, violation of what the Supreme Court stated. The idea of comparing these two things is to want to make a point without being able to make a point. One could argue that Paycheck Protection was wrong because the CARES Act was wrong, because the spending was wrong, because the lockdowns were wrong, because the entire handling of COVID by government, whether it be under Trump or under Biden, was wrong. And you and I could agree on that and sit on the bar stool and drink bourbon and say, those no good so-and-sos and such, and this and that and the other. Which, funny, I said, you wouldn't need Paycheck Protection Program if you let people be in business. I also made the argument of when you forcibly lock people down, when you forcibly screw them out of their life's work, you might have to write a check. You'll notice the lawyers get to keep being lawyers, right? They got to keep being lawyers. They weren't affected. Oh, no. The lawyers got to keep being lawyers. Some people, they were essential and they got to keep making a living. But you owned a bar that your father owned before that and your father owned before that. It's a bar. It's a little restaurant. Oh, it's a local place and people love it. You went out of business, sucker. You should have had a real business, one that the government considered important. So I said both things and engaged full clarity. I opposed it. But if you're going to do this, you might have to write somebody a check. You locked them down. You shut them out. You kept them from their potential. There is not enough room in hell for all the people I would send because of this. But the CARES Act was voted on by the representation of the people. Improperly, in my view, but it was voted on. There's been no vote on this debt cancellation nonsense. It is Joe Biden engaging in an ideological pursuit to win votes. Nope, not win. Did I say win? Hey, producer Carl, just run back the tape a little bit. Did I say win?
No.
Yeah, I did. I did, didn't I?
I'm sorry.
This wasn't a test. I said it. Not to win votes, to buy votes. See, that's the difference, producer Carl. He's not trying to win votes. He's trying to buy votes. That's the difference. And the idea that there are people out there because of their politics and a radical ideology and a desire to get one over on the other side are making this comparison is, and I want to be clear about the word choice I use, blanking embarrassing. And I don't think we should be blanking embarrassing. They're different things. It was wrong, but the money was there and people took advantage of it. That is always a great one to me. You're always amazed when people do that. I opposed the bailouts. 2008, 2009, I strongly opposed the bailouts. I don't believe there's such a thing as too big to fail. The auto manufacturer's issue is not my issue. I oppose the bailouts. Well, in some of the bailouts, there was a moment where Congress got to decide where some of the money went. And in one of the two moments in my radio career that I was rendered speechless on air, one of them was with Congressman Thaddeus McCotter of Michigan. Because I stated to him that why are you voting to put this money, I think he voted to put it into the auto industry. He's from Michigan, after all. Too big to fail shouldn't be a thing. And he said to me, Tony, they already voted to spend the money. I was just voting on where to direct it. Why shouldn't I do that? And I said, well, sir, the problem is, he goes, no. The money's already been voted on. Now what do you want me to do? You want me to think it should go to some other government program? Or should I make my voice heard and put it to a place where I think it could do some good? I didn't vote to spend the money, but the money's getting spent. So now you tell me, what should I do? I mean, he punched me in the face. One of two times I have ever been rendered speechless, having no response, no retort. They simply had the better argument. When someone has a better argument, you say so. There is not a good argument from the, you're opposed to student loan payoffs, but you were fine with Paycheck Protection. These are not apples and oranges. These are apples and crazed monkeys running down the street. They're totally different things. You don't like the monkey one? How about sharks? You don't like that? How about, I don't know, computer chips? Pick something. Any, it doesn't matter. They're totally different things that are not comparable. Whether I discuss what the program was for, whether I discuss congressional approval versus unilateral action, whether I recognize, whether I want to discuss the recognition that some of these businesses were forced into submission by their government. And their government told them to smile and shut up. Just put on the dress and wait for me, bitch. That's what the government, our government, said to citizens. And then, being a good government, John, they left some money on the dresser and said, go clean yourself up. I'll tell you when I need you again. Oh, I'm sorry. Was that a little too on the nose for some people? That's what happened. So, no, there is no way to compare these things. It's, I think, really bad form to try to do so. It is wholly political and ideological. And we don't need any of that in our lives. We don't need any of that. We've got enough of that. The president of the United States is trying to buy votes. And we should all be rightfully disgusted. I'm Tony Katz. I wish. Man, if I could talk, I'd be great at radio. Oh, I'd be crushing. I wish I knew just a little bit more about watches. I like a nice watch. And I've got a lovely collection, if you will, because I like things that are odd and I like things that are fun, not necessarily great collectibles, right? So I have friends that have the multiplicity of Rolex and some of the other things. I'm like, that is a price point. It's radio money, people. I don't think I'm there yet. Tony Katz today, what's going down? find it all at TonyKatz.com. But there are people who like know enough about a subject where they're like, if they see something in distress, like they know, they're like, okay, I can pick it up for this. I know what it'll take to redo. I've seen that issue before. And then I can fix it up and then I can resell it and there's a profit to be made from it, right? That whole flipping idea. I wish I knew better, because I'm staring at one right now. I'm staring at it as we speak. Right, when I see something that right, maybe needs a cleaning or a polishing, there are some watches where I'm like, yeah, I would absolutely do that, and some where I would never do that. So, for example, I would never, ever, ever polish a Rolex. I would not. I have two. Both in the more classic sense. One is a like a mid 80s. It's like that official mid management Rolex, the two tone and the Jubilee bracelet. And then the other one, I have a 1959 Oyster Perpetual, which is super cool. But I mean, it's a real 36 millimeter, right? So it's really small. These days, everything's 40, 41, 42, 900. Right, like people like when they're not spending the money, they wear the Invicta kind of stuff. It's like it's basically a brick on your wrist. It's crazy. But like if it was a Submariner or something, like I would no. Clean it, sure. Having it polished, getting rid of any patina or anything else, no. I wouldn't do it. I think you're hurting the value of it. But other things, you know, like a Breitling Super Avenger, sure, I'd have that cleaned up. I'd have it polished, if you will. I think it's seen in just a completely different category. But it's about like sometimes you know you don't know anything, and then sometimes you know the stuff. It's that space in the middle where you know just enough to be able to have the conversation, but not enough to know exactly how dangerous the thing you're doing is doing and how much it's going to cost you. And I'm staring at a watch right now, and I'd certainly know enough people that could fix it, regardless of what the problem is. And it comes with two bands, the original and a rubberized one, which I like. I'm like, I could see this. I could see giving this a go. But what exactly am I getting myself into? And what is the price that you're willing to be at the entry that you're willing to be like, yeah, I'm going to lose that? This is like playing video poker in Vegas, right? You walk in, or any gambling in Vegas, and you walk in, and you're like, okay, this is the money I'm going to spend on gambling. I'm going to be okay if I have no more of this money in my pocket and when I leave. That's the way it's going to go, right? You're gonna spend this money, you're going to lose this. That's the way I feel about this. So if anybody has ever done any flipping of watches, I would love to hear your experience. And what works and what doesn't. If you just, the only thing is on the Rolex stuff, God bless you if you can follow that whole market. I can't do it. Too many models, too many variations of models, and too many price fluctuations day to day. Did you know that during COVID, Rolexes were selling online for so much money? A Rolex that would have a MSRP on it, the retail price is, let's say, $12,500. That's a lot of money for a watch. We're going for like 25, 30, 40 grand. Things were selling left and right, mainly because people were bored and they had time, they had a little extra cash, and they put into stuff like this. And then over the last year, the prices have just been, they've been falling, they'd go up again, now they're falling again. So somebody bought a watch secondhand for like 22,000, and now they can only get like 14,000 out of it. That's a sad day. And I know what you're saying, Tony, you're talking about some pretty big numbers. Yeah, but some people live in that world. And some people, this is like the gambling that they do. They don't go to Vegas, they do this. I'm not one of those. But I am seeing if I can do this. I'm thinking about giving it a go. And just thinking about doing the flip, putting the money in, am I willing to lose it? Is make me feel oogie, which makes me think I shouldn't do it. I'm Tony Katz. Will Iran strike Israel? That is the belief. That while it was discussed in depth last week, it is seen as almost a fait accompli that Iran is going to make this attack expected in the next 2 days. Wall Street Journal with the reporting. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. This also came with a headline from Politico. Iran wants to hit Israel while avoiding retaliation from Washington. Is that right? You want to get away with hitting your brother and mom not sending you to your room? That's something else. They don't want a war. They don't want to get destroyed by Israel, which they would. That seems obvious now more than ever. They've spent outrageous amounts of money on Hamas. Hamas is being destroyed, and rightfully so, and it shouldn't stop until it's over. By the way, a very interesting bit of data. Very, very interesting. Here it is. A report came out about the actual number of deaths in Gaza. And I said, that's interesting because the AP had put out, here are the deaths, and you go through the numbers, and they're basically quoting the Hamas numbers as I read it. But then you see this from the Foundation for Defense of Democracies and how the Gaza Ministry of Health, which is run by Hamas, a terrorist organization, and they're always saying, look at all the women and children dead. They stated on April 6th, that they had incomplete data for over 11,000 of the 33,000 so-called Palestinian fatalities it claims to have documented. So they note that it's a record is incomplete if it's missing an identity number or a name or a birth date or a death date. So it turns out that if that is the case, that what they're doing is they recognize, like we have discussed, that everybody is on to the fact that they lie through their teeth about the numbers. And when they claim 30,000, the vast majority women and children, it's not the case. They also do not distinguish between civilians and combatants. Oh, is that right? So when you give a number, your number includes terrorists involved in trying to destroy a nation. So the numbers now show that Hamas lies, and people like Elizabeth Warren are pushing and extending out the lie. Elizabeth Warren, who has been one of the radicalized progressives in this. You want to talk about somebody who is clearly set their flag regarding Israel and being opposed to Israel's existence. It is her. It's like Bernie Sanders saying everyone's fed up with this war against Hamas. You know who's really fed up with it? The hostages. And not just the hostages, the ones getting raped every day. They are fed up with this war, Bernie Sanders. Thank goodness you are here. What is it that Elizabeth Warren said recently? Elizabeth Warren stated that there is ample evidence, quote unquote, that Israel's committing genocide. No, there's not, because there's not. And this is what happens when you live in an ideological cesspool and you don't utilize your own mind. This is what takes place. You say these terrible, awful things, siding with a terrorist organization and their PR agenda that the Ayatollah himself would be applauding because your base is so radicalized. This is what they want to hear. It is as gross as you say it is. It is as gross as you think it is. Hamas lies about the numbers. We knew this. We discussed this. When I was in Israel, we brought back the reporting from that, on that subject. Of course they lie. I don't think Iran is lying when they say they're going to attack. And I don't think Iran is lying that they're trying to figure out how not to have the United States respond. And so far, I believe their key to diplomacy is, oh, come on, Joe, it's no big deal, right? Right? Joey, who wants ice cream? I'm pretty sure that's the foreign policy. Although I will admit, I haven't been invited to any of the meetings. It was the attack in Damascus where top Iranian military officials were killed, including a senior member of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, right? What they called the Quds Force, Quds. They said they are going to respond to that, and it's going to be an attack. This ties into a story from the Times of Israel that Iran has been putting weapons into the West Bank for the last 2 years. If you wonder why Israel is so focused on the West Bank and some of the activities happening there. But have you ever looked at a map? I mean, honestly, have you ever looked at a map of Israel? You should. Pull one out. I mean, go to your wherever it is you do your search from and pull out a map of Israel. And you'll take a look at the West Bank. Now, I must admit to you that when it comes to Israel, I don't think there are such a thing as settlements, and I don't pay attention to any level of partition. Israel accepted the deal in 1948, the totally messed up map that it was. The so-called Palestinians wouldn't accept it. Israel became a nation. Every other nation declared war, and they lost. And they lost again in 67. They lost again in 73. As far as I'm concerned, to the victor goes the spoils. The West Bank. You look at it right there, and there's Jerusalem, and let's take a look at this area, you know, whether you hang out to Jericho, and you can see Jordan, and you're like, oh yeah, that's right, there's Jordan, and Jordan really shares a big, long border with Israel, and right there, next to the West Bank. I wonder how Iran got all those weapons into the West Bank. The reports through the New York Times reports it, detail smuggling routes, complex networks of terror groups, criminal gangs, and the Bedouin utilized by Tehran to inundate the area with weapons and foment unrest against Israel. But Iran doesn't want Israel to respond. And as a matter of fact, if Israel should think about responding, Iran wants to hide behind Joe Biden's skirt and say, Dad, make them stop. That also is part of the official policy plan of the Iranians. Man, I cannot wait until they get rid of the Ayatollah and the mullahs and the clerics and they start calling Iran Persia again. Oh, it's going to be a good time. I cannot wait to visit at that moment. Iran is planning an attack. Israel seems to be ready for a counteroffensive. There have been conversations about EMPs, electromagnetic pulses, like Israel completely willing to knock Tehran out. As a matter of fact, as it's happening right now, there are a series of sirens going off across the Galilee. So that's the northern part. I was in those areas. I reported from Kibbutz Matsuva, which was just a little over a mile from the Lebanon border. And I do, on my phone, keep the app going that talks about rocket fire. And if I were to take a look at some of the latest, I'm in a series of those areas to the north and in what's known as the Golan Heights. So there's been a series of rocket attacks and incursions that have all taken place in the last hour. and the head of the IDF, or at least their spokesman, saying that they are ready for any scenario amid reports of an attack from Iran. How does an attack from Iran change the tactics of the ideological here in the United States who want to say that Israel's the problem, Israel's guilty, Israel, like Elizabeth Warren despicably stated, engaged in a genocide, etc.? Any rational person knows that Israel was attacked, and at least will admit it. The irrational people are college students and their professors and the administration, members of Congress, and the president. All right, there's a lot of them. Rational people know what took place. And rational people can say, I think Israel should do X, or I think Israel should do Y. Some people will say, I don't want to send them any more weapons. I'm tired of supporting them. That's it. I think you're allowed to say such a thing. I may think you're wrong, but that's at least an argument. It's a different argument than Israel is not allowed to defend itself. You can argue Israel's allowed to defend itself. I just don't want to pay for the defense. We do that with a lot of countries. Isn't that, for a lot of people, the Ukraine conversation? I think that's an allowable, acceptable conversation. I think it's wrong, but I think it's allowable for sure. But if Iran attacks, they're going to attack what, with ground forces? No, this is going to be from the air. This is going to be missiles and Lord only knows what else they can launch. And by the way, launched from where? From Yemen and the Houthi rebels? Go back to your map. Yemen, you got to get to Saudi Arabia there. And at the bottom. So the missiles are going to come from there over Saudi Arabia? Or are the Houthi rebels now in ships in the Red Sea? Because after all, they've told all the ships that were bringing us, you know, the products we like, you can't be here. The Houthi rebels able to change the navigable seas. And we saw attacks from the United States and the UK, joint attacks on the Houthi rebels. Didn't really do any good. Maybe they've been able to float their way up and they'll be able to attack Israel from the Red Sea. It's a much, if you head up a little north a little bit, it's an easier shot. Maybe they're going to get some assistance in Iran from Jordan. Maybe Iran is simply going to get assistance from Syria and it's all going to come from the north. Where, who else is in the north, in the northern part of Lebanon? Hezbollah. And the North has been waiting for an attack now for months. They've been evacuated since October 7th. There are over 80,000 refugees in Israel who are Israeli. They're refugees in their own country. They're living in hotels, some of them hours away from where they live. They can't go back home. Does an attack from Iran change the calculus? Does it make people say, okay, Israel's under attack, they have the right to defend themselves? Or are they going to say, well, Israel's causing a genocide in Iran too? Part of the calculation that Iran has to have is, if you believe that this war, which is on day 189, by the way, is hurting Israel in a PR sense, damaging them with their strongest ally, the United States, which it's clear that Biden has damaged the relationship. Biden is a bad leader and a weak leader. That seems pretty clear to me. Will an attack from Iran now make Israel look like a sympathetic character, where some of these European nations are like, ah, dang it, now we got to get involved, son? Get me the Ayatollah on the phone. Seriously, man, couldn't you just like keep your powder dry? You had to get in. You had to get involved. You just had to send a missile. Just had to be a tough guy, didn't you? Well, great. Now we got to get involved. Thanks for nothing. And then they send a carrier group, and this one sends this, and that one sends that. I think it might affect them. It might affect the PR war. People want to argue that Israel's losing the PR war. Maybe. But they always lose the PR war. That's kind of par for the course. I just don't want them to lose the war. I want Hamas destroyed and every last member killed. I want Hezbollah gone. I want the hostages back. And I want these people to live in peace. I want everyone just to mind their own business. In Israel tonight, as the sun is setting, they are going to be watching the skies. And it could be a very violent weekend. We will watch. We will discuss. I'm Tony Katz. So at Dartmouth University there, they have a debate between David Hogg and libertarian Spike Cohen about gun control policies. And this woman asks a question. She's a Chinese immigrant. She happens to be running for Congress in New Hampshire. And it's just beautiful.
Hi, my name is Lily Tang Williams. Welcome to my live free or die state. Actually, I am a Chinese immigrant who survived communism. And under Mao, 40 million people were starving to death after he sold communism to them. And 20 million people died, murdered during his Cultural Revolution. So my question to you, David, is that can you guarantee me a gun owner tonight? Our government in the U.S., in D.C., will never, never become a tyrannical government. Can you guarantee that to me?
There's no way I can ever guarantee that any government will not be tyrannical.
Well, then the debate on gun control is over because I will never give up my guns. Never, never. And you should go to China to see how gun control works for dictatorship of CCP.
Beautiful. Her name is Lily Tang Williams. She's a congressional candidate. And it's a fine argument. You can't guarantee my safety, so it's up to me to guarantee my safety. I know, I lived in the place where you couldn't guarantee your safety. It sucked. Just terrific. Just terrific. Clean, concise, direct, and less than 60 seconds. I think she made a lot of fans. Don't know if she can win office, but she made some fans. This is Tony Katz Today. Find everything at TonyKatz.com.